Stand by for the fastest 60 minutes in Jewish radio. It's time for the Jewish Experience. Hi, everyone, and welcome back. Actually, I should say welcome back to me. After visiting Judea and the land of Israel and seeing the brave pioneers working to hold on to the precious gift from God, I have a much deeper appreciation of what's happening in our Holy Land. Hi, I'm Hirsch DeLynn, your host. You are tuned in to Pittsburgh's only Jewish radio program, The Jewish Experience. The Parsha this week is Vayechi. It's interesting that the Parsha starts with Vayechi, and he lived, and then says Yaakov died after spending 17 years in Goshen in Egypt. Well, the reason our sages say is that after all the tsuras, all the problems that Yaakov had in his life, he lived out his last 17 years in peace. He had all his children around him, and he was not fighting anybody, and defending himself against everybody around him. He's free to learn and day and night and just enjoy his family. So it was well-deserved, well-earned. So when it came time for Yaakov to die, he called his children around him to reveal the time of Mashiach, the Messiah. But God took that ability to reveal that away from Yaakov, called Ruach HaKodesh. He then proceeded to bless each of his kids. Yehuda was to produce leaders, kings, while Levi was to be priests, Sukkar scholars, Zebulun businessmen of the sea, and school teachers from Shimon, and soldiers from Gad, and judges from Dan, and olive growers from Asher, and so on, just to name a few. Well, when Yaakov died, even Pharaoh accompanied his body out of Egypt. He was big stuff back then. And they went all the way back to Hebron, where he was buried with Abraham, Sarah, Yitzchak, and Leah in the Cave of Machpelah. You can still visit that site today, which is what we did, although you need to pack some heat just in case. It was a little touchy there for a while, but it was good. In the Parsha, Yosef also dies and also asks to be buried in the Holy Land, but his final interment will have to occur when all the Jews leave Egypt in the first Geula, or redemption. And, of course, we're waiting for the final Geula, which should happen immediately. And speaking of redemption, our staff is ready to redeem you with quality Jewish radio with Musical Moish, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, and Mr. Wordelin. So sit back and enjoy 60 Minutes, the best Jewish radio in Pennsylvania. Of course, we'll have your community announcements and mazel tovs, along with current news fresh from Israel National Radio, coming up on the half hour. Don't forget, you can always find us on the web at jewishexperienceradio.com. Special guest today is Rabbi Yosef Wickler, who is the editor and publisher of Kashrus magazine. He is the recognized expert and source on all matters of keeping kosher. And I'll ask him about some of the politics of Kashrus, as well as some of the interesting developments happening today, straight ahead in the next half hour. And we continue to ask for your support. Continue to get many accolades from listeners about how much they look forward to the show each week, but without your support, it simply can't continue. So as we come into the turn of the year here, consider sponsoring your favorite segment. Think about it a little bit. Doesn't cost that much, $18 to sponsor a segment. Rabbi Goldwasser's Torah Lesson, his popular story segment, is now available. Community news and announcements, popular feminine perspective, and Rabbi Eisen's Moment in Jewish History is also available. So you can just give us a call and reserve your spot. We thank our regular sponsors who have been with us since we began here, Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, Next Generation Financial Services, First Mariner Bank, Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra, and Artistic Photography. Don't forget to ask for a special gift of a beautiful refrigerator magnet that is yours, free, when you call us at 412-979-5770 or send us an email at jewishexperience@verizon.net. And we're starting to creep up as we hit the low point there in terms of time and Shabbos, December 7th. Candlelighting time tonight is 4:38 p.m.
Yeah.
Insight on this week's Parsha is our resident rabbi, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
This week's Torah portion, Parshas Vayechi, concludes the book of Bereshis. The Sedra begins, Vayechi Yaakov, the Eretz Mitzrayim, that Yaakov lived in the land of Egypt, Shva Esrei Shana, for 17 years. The word Vayechi, it has a numerical value, a gematria of 34. The years that Yaakov lived were the first 17 years of Yosef's life, when Yaakov was together with all of his children, including Yosef, and the last 17 years of his life, where he lived in Mitzrayim. Altogether, these years equal 34. And these are the years that Yaakov truly lived. It is interesting that the Torah tells us that Yaakov lived in the land of Mitzrayim, in the land of Egypt. This does not mean merely physically living, but these years, we are told, the years that Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim were the very best years of Yaakov's life. This is difficult to understand. After all, before Yaakov came to Mitzrayim, Yaakov lived in the land of Israel. There, he and his children were shepherds. They were totally involved in a spiritual world, devoting themselves entirely to godliness. When Yaakov came with his family to Egypt, Yaakov was now in a land which was the antithesis of holiness, where idol worship was rampant and the people around lived a very degrading life. How could the Torah refer to these years that Yaakov and his family lived in such a place as the very best years of Yaakov's life? The answer is the following. When Yaakov saw that he, together with his entire family, lived in a strange land, lived in an area which was not conducive to spiritual life, and Yaakov saw that nevertheless he and his children were able to flourish, were able to continue their lives as godly people, these years were truly the very best of Yaakov's life. And Yaakov's living in Mitzrayim, together with his children, especially Yosef, who was involved with conducting the business affairs of Mitzrayim, and yet all of them lived a spiritual life, a life true to godliness. This gives us, their descendants, the power to conquer all of the distractions and obstacles that are in our path in Golus, and gives us the strength to be able to bring Moshiach speedily.
Retirement can be a wonderful reward for years of hard work, but it can also be stressful as you deal with questions about how to maintain your standard of living while protecting what you worked so hard for. What if I told you that you could generate extra cash flow without touching a penny of your savings, investments, or current income? If you or someone you love is 62 years or older and owns their own home, they may be able to take advantage of a federally regulated program called a home equity conversion mortgage or reverse mortgage. Seniors all across the U.S. are using reverse mortgages to increase their cash flow for purchasing long-term care insurance, putting grandkids through college, making charitable donations, paying off credit card debt, paying for prescription drugs, buying vacation homes, and paying for much-needed home repair. Call for a free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet today. Get the facts and help yourself and your family through a reverse mortgage. Call Andy at 412-562-2220 for a free copy while supplies last. Again, that number is 412-562-2220 for your free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet. First Mariner Bank is an equal housing lender.
Will Israel ever see an end to violence? How will the war against Iraq's insurgents impact Israel? Will changes on the Supreme Court have any effect on the Jewish community? Is anti-Semitism in Europe on the rise? What can be done about it? For a look behind the headlines, read the Forward, the nation's Jewish newspaper. The Forward reveals the personalities, motivations, and histories that are fueling the news abroad. The Forward also provides an in-depth look at issues affecting us at home, with comprehensive reports on everything from politics and religion to culture and the arts. It even has its own matchmaking section for Jewish singles. Try 4 weeks free, then be billed $24.95 for another 26 issues. Not satisfied? Just write cancel on the bill and keep the first four issues free.
Call now for the forward, 800-992-3333. That's 800-992-3333. All around us, life is moving faster and faster. Things are changing all the time. And it's a comfort to know in your time of need that at Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, the Jewish tradition continues. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home has served the Pittsburgh Jewish community since 1947 and has recently remodeled its entire facility to better serve you. Burton Hirsch Funeral Directors are members of the Jewish Funeral Directors Association and work closely with area rabbis to ensure that your needs as a Jewish family are totally met. Their attentive and compassionate guidance results in treating each family as their own. I personally met with Michael Hilgefort. And did you know that Burton Hirsch Funeral Home is even involved with community educational programs to ensure that Jewish families know what to do to have a proper burial? In your time of special need, call Squirrel Hill's only Jewish funeral home, Burton Hirsch, at 412-521-2600. That's 412-521-2600. They welcome your request to visit and tour their state-of-the-art facilities. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, proud sponsors of the Jewish Experience, 412-521-2600. Now it's time for A Moment in Jewish History with the author of Miraculous Journey, Rabbi Yosef Eisen.
The best-known non-diplomatic righteous Gentile was the famous German Oskar Schindler, whose efforts in saving 1,200 Polish Jews became immortalized in the book and film Schindler's List. However, there are many lesser-known individuals who saved Jews in many fascinating ways. Anton Schmidt was one of the very few German military personnel actively engaged in saving Jews. A sergeant in the Wehrmacht, stationed in Vilna, Schmidt, in charge of 300 Jewish laborers, quickly gained their affection and confidence. Shocked by the mass killings, Schmidt decided in late 1941 to do whatever he could to help Jews survive. Managing to release imprisoned Jews, he surreptitiously supplied food and provisions to Jews inside the Vilna ghetto. During Nazi raids on the ghetto, Schmidt hid Jews in the cellars of three houses under his supervision. Schmidt also became personally involved with leading figures of the Jewish underground in Vilna, cooperating with them, allowing them to sleep and plan activities in his home. As part of the divine plan, Schmidt was able to travel freely in the course of his military responsibilities, which included collecting straggling German soldiers and reassigning them to new units. Therefore, he was able to drive disguised Jews to other ghettos, such as Warsaw, to warn Jews of Nazi atrocities. Schmidt also sent Jews to other ghettos that were safer than Vilna. Tragically, Schmidt was arrested in 1942, court-martialed, and executed. Eberhard Helmrich, a major in the German army, was the commander of a large farm in Poland. Employing nearly 200 Jews from the Drohobycz ghetto, he saved many of them from arrests and the periodic roundups. On several occasions, Helmrich hid Jews in his home, obtaining the release of others by claiming they were needed for the farm's proper functioning. When he learned that all the Jews in the region were to be liquidated, Helmrich was horrified. He and his wife conceived an original idea, providing false credentials to Jewish girls to pose as Poles or Ukrainians and attain work in Germany. In Berlin, Helmrich's wife found jobs for these girls, making sure there were no Poles or Ukrainians in the houses in which they were employed. Altogether, the Helmrichs saved more than a dozen girls. After the war, they were asked about their motivations. "We were fully aware of the risks, but we decided that it would be better for our children to have dead parents than cowardly parents. From then on, it was comparatively easy. We figured that once we saved two people, we'd be even with Hitler if we were caught, and every person beyond that would put us one ahead." This is Rabbi Yosef Eisen wishing you a very happy and healthy Shabbos.
Now, from the Israel National Radio Newsroom, here's Ernie Singer. The Israel Defense Forces say they will continue their attacks against terrorists in Hamas-controlled Gaza despite calls by the Hamas leadership for a possible temporary calm in the southern Mediterranean coastal area. Hamas calling the truce bid an attempt to reach out to PLO chairman Mahmoud Abbas. Defense officials say Israeli pressure is bearing fruit and there will be room to consider a change to the offensive only if Hamas stops missile attacks by all the terrorist factions. Security sources who talked to Army Radio on Friday said that it was not possible to ignore the statements being made by Hamas's leaders in Damascus and Gaza. However, they denied that Egypt is mediating talks between Israel and Hamas. Quoting now, the IDF activity has failed to stop the Qassams. Being deaf to the other side's readiness to stop the fire of its own volition would be a grave mistake. Officials in the Prime Minister's office said Thursday night that contrary to media reports, Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and Defense Minister Ehud Barak were not seriously considering Hamas's calls. Quoting one official, the rules for a ceasefire are simple. When the terrorism stops and kidnapped soldier Gilad Shalit is returned, our fire will stop. The official assured reporters that there are no plans to stop operations in Gaza while terrorist rockets continue. Quoting the officer, referring to the influx of weapons in the Hamas-controlled area, as long as the terrorism and the buildup continue, Israel will act in self-defense. A senior diplomat says that as long as Hamas remains in power, Abbas will refuse to compromise in negotiations with Israel, according to the Foreign Ministry's strategic assessment for 2008. The official says that a major army operation in Gaza would be extremely costly, but Israel could attempt to appease Abbas by releasing terrorists and ending Jewish construction in Judea and Samaria, which could lead to an improvement despite Abbas's inflexibility. Soldiers killing a Hamas terrorist during a gunfight in Khan Yunis in southern Gaza Friday morning, according to Hamas sources. The army says there was no shootout in the area. No injuries or damage from a Qassam rocket which exploded south of Ashkelon. Two soldiers lightly wounded by an explosive charge detonated Friday morning along the security fence separating central Gaza from the rest of Israel near Kisufim. Hamas claiming in a pamphlet that it used anti-aircraft weapons against Israeli Air Force helicopters for the first time on Thursday. According to the London-based Asharqil Al-Sat Arabic Daily, the incident occurred as the choppers circled over central Gaza in close support of ground troops. According to the Yediot Ahronot's Ynet news service, the Air Force said it's not aware of the event, but that the fire may have gone unnoticed even if the army is aware that the terrorists have the weapons. Former Deputy Defense Minister Ephraim Sneh has told Newsweek magazine that America's national intelligence estimate on Iran makes it more likely that Israel will strike the Islamic Republic alone. The estimate says that Tehran stopped developing nuclear weapons in 2003. Quoting Sneh, "We are closer to this situation today than we were 3 weeks ago. We need to prepare for stopping this threat on our own." Bruce Riedel, a senior official at the Saban Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institute and a former top Central Intelligence Agency man, told the magazine that he visited Israel before the NIE's publication and, in his words, came back convinced that the Israelis were going to attack Iran. With the Prime Minister's backing, Vice Premier Chaim Ramon says the pocketbook and politics will determine the future of his plan to offer financial incentives to Israelis in Judea and Samaria who wish to move to pre-1967 Israel. Ramon says if the cost is too high or if the plan endangers the coalition, the project will be abandoned. He said Thursday that 70 members of Knesset support the move, but admitted some of them would not support it unless Israel already reached a deal with the PLO. Social activist and former Knesset member Saadia Marciano has died at the age of 58. Marciano was co-founder of the Black Panther movement, which protested discrimination against poor Sephardic Jews by the establishment in the 1970s. He was born in Morocco and represented the left-wing Shalit Party in the Knesset from 1977 to 1981. Are stupidity and avarice behind American foreign policy in the Middle East? For a look at this question, listen to Professor Paul Eidelberg on the Tamar Yonah Show, on demand on the Internet at IsraelNationalRadio.com. Shabbat is Yud Gimel, or the 13th of Tevet on the Jewish calendar, and the weather forecast partly cloudy and colder than average with scattered showers mainly over southern and central Israel on Friday. No rain or significant change in temperature on Shabbat or Sunday, slightly warmer on Monday. In Jerusalem Friday, 12 degrees centigrade, 54 Fahrenheit. Ernie Singer, Israel National Radio.
That was a look at Jerusalem weather. And now for your local weather, here's meteorologist Glenn Foxen.
High pressure and nice weather is in store for the Pittsburgh area this Shabbos. Our next chance of precipitation in the form of rain showers will develop on Motzei Shabbos and again on Sunday from the effects of a cold front moving towards the area. The next chance of light snow will come late on Wednesday into Thursday. No big storms are forecasted at this time. So the forecast for Pittsburgh and vicinity for tonight, Friday night, increasing cloudiness and cool with the low temperature 30 to 35 degrees. Shabbos day, mostly cloudy and mild with a high temperature 50 to 55 degrees. Saturday night, mostly cloudy and mild with the chance of scattered rain showers developing late in the evening, low temperature near 40. Sunday, showers are likely, high temperature 45 to 50. On Sunday night into Monday, we'll see partial clearing skies. Temperatures will cool into the 20s at night and a high of the 30s during the day. This is meteorologist Glenn Foxen wishing everyone good weather and great times this Shabbos.
We want to wish our brothers and sisters in the Holy Land a very peaceful and restful Shabbat.
Okay, let's take a look at the Mazel Tovs happening in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania this week. Mazel Tov to Moshe and Batya Isaacs on the birth of a granddaughter. And Mazel Tov to Leslie and Alan Itzkowitz on the birth of a grandson. And the Father and Son program, DeColo, still continuing after Shabbos, 7:15 to 8 p.m., at least three prizes are offered, and of course pizza and cookies and all kinds of neat stuff. Bring someone new, receive an extra prize raffle ticket. Call DeColo for more information, 412-420-0220. The Meeting of Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous meets at the Pittsburgh Colo, and notice the change from the Shari Torah. It's now meeting at the Pittsburgh Colo, 5808 Beacon Street, every Sunday evening from 7:30 to 9 p.m. It's a change in time also, so... they're meeting at the Colo, 7:30 to 9, on Sunday evening. That's still the same. So 5808 Beacon Street. And the program is a recovery group, if you're not familiar with it, for people who cannot control their eating or their weight. Not for women only. Men are invited. For more information, call Ilana at 412-422-2224. If you'd like to have your Mazel Tovs on our program or your events and you want to share them with the community, you can give us a call, 412-979-5770, or better yet, email jewishexperience@verizon.net by noon on Monday for that week's program. Now we got candlelighting time this week, 4:38 p.m. We're excited to have with us today Rabbi Yosef Wickler, who is the editor and publisher of Kashrus magazine. He's the Menahel of Yeshivas Birkas Reuven. He teaches classes on Kashrus, as you would imagine, and Talmud. He's also a noted public speaker. Rabbi Wickler, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here, Herschel.
Well, we're glad to have you. I have just personally returned from Israel after a couple of weeks there. I have three children learning in Israel. And one of the fascinating subjects, which is why we've asked you to come on the program today, is the complex nature of Kashrus in Israel, even more so than in the United States, where we have recognized symbols where most people know what's okay, what's not okay. But for the traveler, especially for the traveler from the United States to Israel, when they arrive, they're just inundated with so many kashrus symbols that becomes almost like trying to work a maze here. And you hear, as soon as you get there, all kinds of the conflicting information. So the first thing I want to talk about is, number one, kashrus supervision in general. We rely, obviously, the individual who decide, unless he makes everything by himself, and certainly when he's on vacation, he can't do that. So he's got to rely on other people or other organizations and qualified organizations to be able to use the products when he visits Israel specifically. So the first thing I'd like to get into here, in your opinion and in your expert opinion on what's going on, is why so many different kashrus organizations in Israel, and then we're going to get into some difficulties on who's reliable, who's not reliable, in your opinion, and why. So let's start with the concept of the multiple kashrus organizations in a country so small. How did this develop, and where do you see it going from here?
Well, that's a big question. That's enough for the whole show.
Okay. We'll take it a little, as far as we can take it here for a couple of minutes.
Okay. The thing is that with Israel, it isn't like so much in America where you have a lot of independent organizations. In Eretz Israel, in the land of Israel, most of the organizations that you hear about are really rabbinates of a certain city, which are united through the central rabbinate, the chief rabbinate of Israel, which was given the role of taking care of kosher for the state of Israel. There are additional certifications as well that are giving their certification, but the majority of what's going on is in the hands of the local rabbinates in every single city across the state of Israel.
So are they certified by the central rabbinate?
Yeah, the central rabbinate is the one that gives them the authority. Not every single rabbi who has gotten a title and a city or a part of a city is entitled to give kosher certification. He's only given that right through the rabbinate. So that actually, even though they may be individual people and their names may appear, it will be as part of a rabbinate. And there are many people who are giving kosher certification in Israel. And this is a growing mass, a very frightening growing mass of people who are giving kosher certification who are not authorized by the rabbinate,
mm-hmm.
nor by the state, and it's actually against the laws of the state of Israel that were put in, I think, even in the 80s, where they made a law that no one else can touch the kashrus, can be in charge of kosher, except the rabbinate. It means the national chief rabbinate of Israel and all of its departments throughout the country, plus certain other kosher organizations that are acceptable to the chief rabbinate.
Okay, so the chief rabbinate actually sets the standards, is that correct?
They set the standards for the most part, but what happened is that's being undone now.
Okay.
It's being chipped away, and I don't know exactly the dynamics of where it's headed. It's headed for, in my own opinion, it's headed for a cataclysmic conclusion, and I don't know exactly how it's going to end up.
Right.
Either the rabbin is going to win, or the rabbin is going to lose.
Yeah.
And we wrote about it in this issue of the Kashrus magazine. The dynamics there, where there was an attack by some politicians attempting to dismantle the rabbinate's control and on kosher. And they felt it was all tied into the Shemitah problem,
right,
and the rabbinate's position on Shemitah.
Okay. So if the rabbinate sets the standards, and each one of these that are affiliated with the rabbinate should, if somebody goes to a particular city, they should, with confidence, be able to trust whether, and explain this if you would, whether it's Rabbanut Yerushalayim or it's Rabbanut Tel Aviv, if those two organizations, I would assume, get their franchise from the chief rabbinate. Is that correct?
Well, part of it's correct. They are getting their control from the chief rabbinate. The thing that you don't understand, Herschel, is that the entire kosher setup is different than in this country. In this country, every kosher organization is giving certification based on their personal standards, what they feel kosher should be.
Right.
In Israel, there's a different interest. Since the land is populated to the most part by Jewish people, there's a tremendous concern to create a basic level of kosher across the state.
Right.
And in order to do that, they instituted minimal levels of kosher.
Okay.
And that's why some rabbinates are living at that minimal level.
Okay.
And other rabbinates have a much higher level. When this became a big issue, maybe some 20 years ago, or 20, 30 years ago, they created a new level called Mahadran,
right,
which meant that there was some kind of standard that means we should all feel at home going to any of the cities that have a Mahadran standard, and that would be somehow unified, but the basic standard would vary very greatly from a small town or from a Tel Aviv to a Jerusalem.
Okay, so where does Landau fit into this, which everybody seems to point to them as the highest standard?
Well, I assume you're referring to Rabbi Landau in Bnei Brak. He is one of those that are pretty universally accepted. There are several others as well,
mm-hmm.
who have reached a level of, you know, more or less complete satisfaction in terms of the populace. And the populace is very, very disparate. There's so many different groups living in Israel. It's amazing that anybody could get almost universal approval. But there are several organizations that have reached that level. About four or five altogether, I think. You have your you have your Eid HaRedes of Yerushalayim. You have your Sheiris Yisrael in Bnei Brak.
Mm-hmm.
You have Rabbi Landau. You have Rabbi Avraham Rubin in Rehovot. And I'll have to think a little bit more, but we'll probably come up with a few more that have a pretty universally accepted standard.
Okay. Is there anybody, now, for the traveler, just real quick, because I want to get a few things in before we run out of time. Is there any supervision that you would say is not reliable to be careful about?
Yes, but I'm not going to tell you which one.
I knew you were going to say that.
In general, my feeling is that the consumer, whether in America or in Israel or any place, has to have a certain someone to rely upon.
Right.
And there's different spokes with different folks. I can't make one unilateral decision for everybody what's good and what's bad. Each person is going to choose with either with his own rabbi, or perhaps you want to choose a kosher organization that you rely very heavily upon.
Okay.
And that organization would be able to direct you to those other organizations which they are affiliated with or familiar with in other countries. And this is a way of sort of developing from concentric circles from what you know to be true to spread out further and further to places that you're not so familiar with. And that's what I recommend, that people establish a rapport with an existing kosher organization which they consider to be perfect.
Okay, and as a final word on this before we move on, Mahadran, if somebody sees the Mahadran tag on their kosher organization, does that automatically imply that Mahadran standard from the central rabbinate?
Again, Mahadran is a term that anybody could use. There isn't an exact book that says this is Mahadran and this is not Mahadran. And each city determines what is Mahadran and what is not. But the effort, the emphasis, the attempt is to create something that is what we consider to be a high standard. It's not uniform at all, but it is closer to the higher than it is closer to the lower. And the local and the rabbinates have to give a tudat regilah, a basic level kosher standard, in order to be able to include as many possible certifications as they can to make it easier for the masses to keep kosher.
Sure.
So they will it will create a new set of standards for Mahadran. They're not the same from one city to the next.
Okay.
But they're closer to the same than they are to the lowest standard.
Okay, in the last few minutes, just very quickly, let's talk about Shemitah, which is also very confusing for the kosher consumer traveling. And we have two issues that seem to be battling each other here, the Heter Mechira and also
Yevul Mochri.
Yeah, which is the two areas where one, you're saying, you know, the Shemitah Chumra, where you're basically buying vegetables either imported or from Arabs, and the other one is where you're letting the land be sold. So in 2 minutes, if you can, just talk about the differences and talk about if there is one way or the other way that you feel is people should do, or is it again up to them or up to their rabbis?
Definitely, there isn't one way.
Okay.
And there are three or four different things. You were just using those two, but there's a third and a fourth. You would talk about Otsar Beistin,
mm-hmm.
and you might want to talk about Matam and Nutak. But the question you're raising is the difference between Heter Mechira and Yevul Nochri. Heter Mechira means that the land has been sold to non-Jews, perhaps Arabs, and for the year of the seventh year, which is called Shemitah. And that land being sold means that it's not in Jewish hands, and therefore the laws of Shemitah won't apply.
Right.
Yevul Nochri is saying that non-Jews working on the land of Israel do not have the same laws as I do, and therefore they could work on the land of Israel, and still their produce will not be called Shemitah produce. We call Kedusha Shviz.
Right.
And some people feel that would work fine if a non-Jew does it in his own house, his own community, in another state, another country. But in the land of Israel is holy no matter who works on it.
Sure.
And this is the question, does anybody believe that you could really do a proper sale to an Arab for the state of Israel? That's a big issue. What happened this year is that the chief rabbinate, wanted not to give kosher certification to people who were using Heta Mechira, relying on the sale to the Arabs. They want it, they've been trying all the years to get away from it, and this year they were convinced they would be able to get away from it. But there was literally a revolt in the state of Israel where people didn't want to let them let go this leniency that's been going on since the state was founded. Yeah. And they and because of that revolt, the rabbinate made a little about-face and set up a situation where there are four rabbis that if your rabbi in your city decides he will not give you kosher certification because you're buying products that were produced under Heta Mechira, so you can go to one of these four rabbis, which the rabbinate of Israel has set up, who they have to give you kosher certification. But they freed the individual rabbis of the individual towns from allowing you to use Heta Mechira products.
Hmm. Okay. Well, that's kind of interesting, and it's that does get a little bit political, but I guess it has to be done just for the sensibilities of both sides.
Yes.
It's kind of hard to understand. And also, it is, you brought up a great point. It's hard to understand how you can sell, Eretz HaKodesh to the Arabs, and that's in itself a tough issue. So, anyway, okay. Well, I appreciate you talking about those two things, and in the last minute we have, I'm going to dispense with that other question I had, because I think we're going to have you back for that, but and other issues. But like you talk just for another minute on Kashrus Magazine, what it's all about, what you're trying to do with it, and how people can subscribe to it.
Oh, very good. Kashrus Magazine has been publishing for 28 years, and what we do let people know when products are mislabeled, unauthorized use of kosher symbols, paravideri clarifications. We let you have a list of all the kosher certifications in the world and how to reach them. 921 kosher certifications are listed in our book.
Unbelievable.
The 2008 Kosher Supervision Guide. We go into all the topics we mentioned today. We had this issue, Herschel, is that we just published. It's called January 2008. We just printed. Is all about Israel, and it's about Shemitah. It's about different kosher alerts for Israel, talks about the Passover hotel, things like that, which people really have to know. But anything to do with kosher, whether it's about keeping kosher in the YMHA, whether it's about the new hot foods that are kosher, glatt kosher, and being sold in vending machines, which you haven't even seen yet, but this is coming out, whether it's whether you need a license to give hashgacha, Jewish unity, many, many, many topics, all discussed in this magazine, five times a year, plus two guides, a guide for kosher supervision guide, and a guide called the Summer Travel Issue. It's our travel issue guide. And we sell it through subscription. If anybody's interested in contacting us, it's our telephone number is 718-336-8544, or you can email us, or you can go see us on the web at Kashrus Magazine, K-A-S-H-R-U-S, magazine.com. And love to hear from some of your listeners and any of the questions that they may have about kosher. And we'd love to get them to get the magazine. It costs $25 a year for a subscription for five issues, plus the two guys that we referred to.
Very nice. And we are going a little bit over, so let me just thank you for being with us, and we're going to have you back because there is some other issues we need to discuss. And you've been a delight this afternoon on the Jewish Experience radio program. That's Rabbi Yosef Wickler, who is the editor-publisher of Kashrus Magazine. And he's been doing this for a long time. And if you have any questions, he's the guy to ask. So thank you again for being with us, and have a good Shabbos.
Dear Mr. President, as a believer in the Bible, you know that the Jewish people were given the land of Israel not because of a UN declaration, but because of a declaration from God. The Bible says God owns the world. There is room for everyone, but He promised Israel to His chosen people, hence the name, the Promised Land. As you are aware, Mr. President, the Bible stipulates that the eternal boundaries of this promised land includes everything west of the Jordan River. So to suggest now that a Palestinian state be carved from the West Bank and Gaza, land specifically included in God's promise, is wrong. It's time for America, one nation under God, to support the entire land of Israel. Because the promised land was promised forever. Sincerely yours, BelieversOfTheBible.org.
For a look at the feminine side of things, reporting from Israel, here's Miss Devorah DeLynn.
Have you ever heard the expression, a penny for your thoughts? The Torah puts a great emphasis on the importance of thoughts, perhaps even more so than on feelings or even actions. As we've explained in previous segments, thoughts play a crucial role in our everyday lives, merely because of the fact that they start the process that eventually leads to an action. Did you know that one can even base a halachic decision on the intention of a person? In this week's Torah portion, Parshas Vayechi, we finish the book of Genesis, Bereishis, the first book of the Torah. We learn about Yaakov Avinu's blessings to each of his sons and to Yosef's sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. As is accepted, he begins with Reuven, the firstborn son of Leah. Reuven v'choli ata, kochli v'reishis oni. Instead of elaborating on Reuven's strengths and abilities, Yaakov instead speaks harshly with him and reminds him of a time when Reuven disrespected his stepmother and switched Yaakov's bed to his mother, Leah's tent. Is this normal? Yaakov Avinu's on his deathbed, and instead of making up and forgetting about it, it seems as if he is still carrying a grudge from tens of years ago. However, a true Torah scholar knows that one cannot judge from appearances alone. The Ora Chaim HaKadosh starts off by asking many questions about this, one of which was struck me as quite incredible. Did you know that it says in Sefer Devarim that one may not give precedence to a favorite child in front of the eldest child? Aside from the fact that the Torah has such compassion and consideration for even minutia, let it bring rivalry, how could Yaakov Avinu criticize Reuven when Yosef, the favorite son, was standing right there, especially since we know that the others kept the Torah? The Or HaChaim explains that the Avos did keep the Torah as it was passed from Hashem to Adam to Chanoch to Noach to Shem and finally to the Avos. However, the only part of the Torah that was absolutely required was the seven mitzvot of Noach. Anything else was there for extra reward. The Avos, because of their love of Hashem, took on the rest of the mitzvot of their own free will. Nevertheless, if they saw a situation where keeping the extra mitzvot was not in concurrence with the law of the countries outside of Eretz Yisrael, they followed the law of the land, as we see in the story of Rachel and Leah. The Avos were not punished because they only did these things in extreme circumstances, and more importantly, they had the intention of doing so only out of love for Hashem. Do you see what this means? Our thoughts, our intentions when we do things, play an integral role. So integral that Hashem even overlooks punishment because of our intentions. As we see with the Avos, everything they did, no matter what, was out of complete and total love of Hashem. This is why Yaakov felt he could still chide Reuven in front of Yosef. His scolding was out of love for his children, and through his children, his love of Hashem. We can now understand why Reuven, although he did sin, is still recounted as Bechor Yisrael, the eldest of the tribes. His intentions at the time of switching his father's bed to his mother's tent was only out of honor and respect of his mother, which, as we know, is the commandment from which we are guaranteed a long life. Reuven not only had a long life in this world, but also merited that his name, Bechor Yisrael, would live on forever, purely because of the intentions he had. Can you now imagine accepting only a penny for your thoughts? Have a good Shabbos.
Now it's time for another classic story from our master storyteller, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
This is a story about the Tzemach Tzedek. Whether awake or in his dreams, the Rebbe would sometimes see his grandfather, the Alter Rebbe, who had already passed away, but brought him solutions to his questions in learning. On one occasion, he was in his study learning and had a big question and did not know how to answer it. He yearned to see his grandfather, but this was not granted. And this made him deeply distressed. A long time passed. One morning, the Rebbe rose early to go to shul. On his way through the marketplace, he was stopped by a simple pious Jew who made a living from his petty transactions there. It was a market day, and the man asked for a loan of 3 rubles until the evening, or until the next morning. The Tzemach Tzedek asked him to come to his home after he came back from davening in shul, and then he would gladly give him the money. When he arrived in shul, the Rebbe prepared himself for davening. He took out his talis and put it over his head to wrap himself with when the request of the man came to his mind. It had not been right to ask him to wait until after davening, because today was market day, and in the meantime, he could have earned himself some money. The Rebbe immediately removed his talis, went home, took 5 rubles, and set out in search of the man. He eventually found him, though with great difficulty, because the market was filled with many peasants with their wagons loaded with merchandise from the surrounding villages. He gave the man the money, and this little deed done, he returned to shul to daven. No sooner had he wrapped himself in his talis and put on his tefillin than he saw before him the countenance of his grandfather, the Alter Rebbe, who answered his question he had had on his learning. He also added, when a man gives a loan to his fellow man with all his heart and does a favor lovingly in fulfilling the mitzvah of Ve'ohavta L'Reyacha Kamocha, to love your friend as yourself, for such a man the gates of heaven are open wide. This is Rabbi Meir Goldwasser wishing you all a good Shabbos.
As we wrap up another exciting edition of the Jewish Experience radio program, I want to thank Rabbi Yosef Wickler, who's the editor and publisher of Kashrus Magazine. And, you know, we may have a segment with him. Wonder what everybody thinks about that. If you have any Kashrus questions you want to get, go to the source. We may take those questions and have him answer them on the air. So that's something that may be coming up. We'll let you know more about that as we get down to it and discuss it more. I want to review a couple of events happening. The Father and Son program at the Kurlal after Shabbos, 7:15 to 8 p.m. Call 412-420-0220. And don't forget the Meeting of Food Addicts Recovery Anonymous, Pittsburgh Kurlal, 5808 Beacon Street, note to change, Sunday evening, 7:30 to 9. Call Ilan at 412-422-2224. Don't forget, you want to share your Mazel Tovs with the Jewish community, you can do it, by, and that's free, complimentary, 412-979-5770, or you can email jewishexperience at verizon.net by noon on Monday for that week's program. And we also want to thank our cutting-edge staff, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, musicalmoist.com, Dr. Michael Schulman, Mr. Vordelin reporting from Israel, and our engineer, Jeremy LeBossenstein, for another outstanding show. Don't forget, candlelighting time is 4:38 p.m. It's been a ton of fun. I do have to run. Don't forget, I'm Hirsch Lynn. Have a wonderful Shabbos. We'll see you all next week or before on the web at jewishexperienceradio.com anytime. And we'll be back here Friday, same Yiddish time, same Yiddish channel. Shabbat Shalom.
Shalom, Malachi Elyon, Malachi Elyon, Mimelech Malchei HaMalachim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mimelech Malchei HaMalachim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shabbat.